On this episode of IGAV, Cisco is suing Neat, what that means for end users. Also, Microsoft is ending support of Windows 7, how that's going to impact the IT and AV community. All that and more next on IGAV.
The network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
This is ITAV, episode 38, recorded Friday, January 24th, 2020. IT Quirks.
Support for AV Nation is brought to you by
Sure, sound extraordinary.
This is ITAV's monthly look at the IT and AV space and how they kind of come together. My name is Tim Albright, my host with us to discuss the news we have gathered for this month. First and foremost, Michael Drainer from Drainer Technologies. Welcome, sir.
Hello, everyone. Welcome. Glad to be here.
All righty. Also with us is Mr. Sean Reed, Astroman AV. Welcome, sir.
Welcome.
And back from a long hiatus and vacation and holiday and everything else, Mr. Brad Colt from HGA.
Hello. It is great to be here.
Good to see you again, bud. Good to see you. First story actually comes to us from our site and our editor, Lenora Lane. Interesting goings on with Cisco, and this is not the first time Cisco has sued a former employee, but they are doing it again. Cisco is suing the Norwegian startup Neat, from our article. At the heart of the dispute is billionaire OG Wings Neat's product manager and his investment partner, who together sold Tanberg and Arcano to Cisco in 2015 and 2010, respectively. Cisco is alleging that both Wing and his partners have stolen Cisco proprietary hardware, honestly, and some of their trade secrets. Michael, we've talked about IP and intellectual property and copyright and patent disputes on AV Nation for the last probably the last 8-9 years. Most recent being with microphone manufacturers. Now we're talking about video conferencing systems. When suits like this happen, and you've got Cisco, which, let's be honest, is a big, pretty good behemoth going up against basically a startup. Number one, what does that do to the customers that are being impacted? But number two, what does that do to designers when they're looking at systems going, maybe I shouldn't pick Neat if the outcome of this system or outcome of this suit isn't favorable to them?
Yeah, you know, so it definitely affects it at that level, right, when it comes to the end product integration. But I want to take it back a step further and really talk about the stifling of innovation here from a manufacturer's perspective. You know, it's very, very difficult when you get new ideas to go out into the plethora and or into the ether, sorry, and look at the plethora of products out there and not replicate something that's already existing, right? We would like to say that we could create new things and do it a different way, but the reality is sometimes there's only one or two ways to do things, and somebody may already have a patent on that methodology and you not know about it. In this particular case, we don't know all the details yet, right? But you're taking a somebody who developed products and services that they then sold to a manufacturer years ago. Gosh, man, the Tanberg sale was well over a decade, wasn't it? I mean,
almost
2006 or something along those lines. So I don't know what the statute of limitations are on those things. If there were technologies in those pre-existing products that they reutilized, or if they acquired some sort of Cisco proprietary information and then utilize it. If that's the case, sure, they should definitely look into that. But the reality is that innovation, sometimes there's overlaps, and that's going to happen. And what we don't want to do is stifle innovations. And when you have an 800-pound gorilla like Cisco out here, you know, putting the clamp down, you want them to protect their intellectual property. They've made good investments in that. But at the same time, how do you bring balance to the industry so that people with great ideas can flourish and grow and bring value to an industry, right? And I think that's kind of the discussion that needs to be had here is, I don't think Cisco should step aside, but at the same time, we need to find a way to make sure that innovators have a way to accurately check what they're doing so that we can bring those innovative products to market.
Okay, Sean, Michael brings up a good point. How do we do that, right? How do we make sure that yes, research and development is protected while at the same time making sure that we don't award too broad of patents.
You know, this is one of those things. There's always going to be disruptors to, especially the IT. And as AV and IT start to merge more and more, and IT companies like Cisco or Adobe and other ones start to breach into AV or Google Meets or whatever it is, we're going to see more of this. You're going to see software-based companies struggling with, do they create their own hardware? And if so, do we invest it, or do we try and improve on an existing design, which is what happens a lot of time, as Michael said. People are not necessarily, and like you said, we don't know all the details, but let's just say people aren't necessarily stealing or infringing. They're taking something existing and looking at how they can make it better, which is how most innovation happens. I mean, someone made a car, someone made a better car. Someone made a plane, someone made a better plane. You're going to say, well, you can't have a flying machine too. To that end, though, how is it going to happen? Markets tend to sort themselves out. And I understand the need to protect intellectual property. That's a guarantee for any company. But at the same time, competition drives markets. You know, as we've seen, let's just take cell phones, for example. Nowadays, people only pretty much buy two cell phones, either an Apple phone or a Samsung phone. 10 years ago, we had four or five companies. They still exist, but no one's out there buying BlackBerries and Nokias in America because the market sorted itself out. And I think we'll see that again. I find when companies do these kind of lawsuits, while they're justified and they have a legal right, it tends to actually damage their brand in a sense. People look at them and go, well, if you're, you know, so threatened by any kind of competition, there are people who are going to say, well, maybe I don't want to use that product because I don't want it to be that I buy Cisco, and because later I've developed something better, if I were to start my company, they're going to come after me. We as integrators, designers, programmers, you know, we always struggle with this interoperability problem. When someone says, I have an existing system, or I've already bought this license or this product and I want it to work with this, and we go to a said company, and since we're talking about Cisco, and we find out we can't necessarily make them work well because they're like, no, we want you to use our system and we're not going to let you integrate as well. You know, the big problem that comes up, and I'm sure we've all seen this, when people have a large conference room and they want to use more than one Touch 10 and you can't connect them, you have to use these two separate systems, and Cisco still won't deal with this in a proper way. You know, you can try and corner the market and make your own little niche, your own little fiefdom, but to whose benefit? It might benefit the company, but are you benefiting your clients? So I think competition is healthy. I think it helps all of us. It helps the end user, helps the designers, and it sorts itself out. But these lawsuits, they drag out. Look what's going on still with Shure and
Clear One.
Yeah. How long has that been going on? Has anyone stopped buying the MXA910? Nope. Are they still outselling Clear One's products? Absolutely. Clear One is actually being damaged by pursuing this. Instead of saying, you know what, we can either make a better product and move on, but let's just keep suing. They're not getting anywhere with it. And I think it'll be the same thing. To make an analogy, for lack of a better word, you know, the idea, you know, Gore v. Bush, let's sue over an election. Gore's political career was over. It kind of damages the person being the sore loser rather than trying to rise above and do better going forward. You know, what better can you do? Fine, maybe they infringed a little bit. No one will really know. We're not all sitting in the room. We don't know what happened. But to kind of beat the dead horse of it until people just look at you as a sore loser or someone who's so threatened by any new product, well, if you're not going to innovate and improve, then I'll look for the next best thing. So yeah, it has pluses and minuses. And I think we will see new companies emerge. I think we'll see people split off and start new companies. We'll see other companies reemerge. Utelligy's completely rebuilt itself. We'll see other companies do the same thing and take up that space. Everyone's kind of adjusting and trying to figure out how we're going to fully integrate AV, IP, hardware, software into a more conglomerated market. AV is not just AV anymore. IT is not IT anymore. Telecommunications isn't just telecommunications anymore. No. We're all dealing with multiple facets of this growing industry, and we'll have to adjust.
Yeah, Brett, actually, that brings up another good point here. As a designer and somebody who's responsibility for bringing, you know, new innovative products to clients, as you develop designs for it, do things like this, does it damage maybe your guys' perception of a company, or make you wary when you are looking at a design, whether it be a company that's you know, over indulgent in the suing part, not saying that Cisco is, but somebody who that is kind of their strategy, or on the other side, a company who is in the process of you know, having a dispute go on, when you start looking at, you know, your design, which are sometimes 12, 18, 24 months out, not knowing the outcome of that lawsuit.
Yeah, I can say that it's been a while since I've seen any clear one on any of the projects I've been reviewing. You know, so I think that the comments that Sean and Michael are making are pretty accurate when it comes to damaging your brand and that reputation by trying to pursue that aggressive business tactic rather than trying to rise above. And I think it's probably the right thing for Cisco to do as a business move in trying to stifle that competition. But it does not really play well to my Midwest sensibilities of wanting to try and play fairly. I feel like they're a giant and trying to go after a startup who has to be really careful about what their burn rate is on the capital that they have available. And that business tactic is going to be, let's try and crush them before they're able to make it to that next round of financing or just run them out of money through a lawsuit. You know, I'd rather see that be something that's happening through fair competition instead.
Mm-hmm. All right, very good. Next couple stories actually are two kind of in one. We'll explain that in a second. Both of them involving Microsoft. First one is the NSA discovering a vulnerability in Windows 10 that not just doesn't impact Microsoft's operating system, but also Google's Chrome browser, which is that's where this is going. But the other part is the fact that Microsoft is no longer supporting Windows 7. This is, both of these are issues, and I'm bringing them up, number one, because Microsoft is the biggest OS in the world. In the AV industry, I would argue it's also the biggest OS in the AV industry. Yes, some people do use Linux, and you know, God love them, and they can have their Linux.
Those are good people.
No, whatever. you'll have your say in a second. But Sean, one of the things that as the industry 20 years ago, right, started getting into the network stuff, and mm-hmm. Companies started putting RJ45s on the back of devices. And they started deploying configurators that were built in. They were the web browser and configurators that was baked into the devices themselves. You 192'd over to it, or you ARP'd over to it, and you got into the system. Invariably, it was a web browser that popped up to let you do that. For a long time, it was Windows Explorer. It was Internet Explorer, and God love the folks that have moved on from that for various reasons. But the fact that we are still leveraging Windows as a platform and browsers as a platform, how do we as an industry protect ourselves and protect our customers when we're, you know, still kind of leaning on this infrastructure that is open to hacks and is open to vulnerabilities? Or is there no way around it? We just have to make sure that we're continually patching.
There's no way around it. As you know, as the old saying goes, as long as you create a better mousetrap, someone will create a better way to get around the mouse gets smarter. I mean, we've seen it. It's interesting, that article about that SSL certificate that I was talking about. Firefox doesn't have the problem, only Explorer, Bing, and Chrome. And as we all, for those who don't know, you know, Firefox is also the makers of Tor browser, which is used on the dark web, which is incredibly secure and secretive. Interesting that Firefox is immune to this little hack. You kind of see how they've gone their own separate way compared to the two big guys, Microsoft and Chrome. So there'll always be someone out there trying to find a way to penetrate. I mean, hackers have a skill and they use it. I remember 20 some years ago when I used to hang out, when I lived in San Francisco, and I had friends who were hackers and were the bane of Microsoft back then and were constantly getting threatening letters for their things. You know, they eventually, two of them got jobs at Microsoft and one of them ended up in jail. So you're never going to have 100% fix, but as an industry having to use these systems, you're starting to see, as you've seen, Extron and Crestron have opened up a little bit more, QSE switched to Lua, which is a rather obscure language that no one's using. Everyone's finding different ways to carve out these little niches. I think what QSE has done with Lua is very creative. There's some things you can do with the scripter there that are completely unique. You can't do with Extron, Crestron, or AMX. which gives a lot of opening for new people to come into the industry. So they found a way to not only make it slightly more secure by using a different coding language, but also open up an opportunity for people who don't have a programming background to learn programming and then say, hey, I'm going to use QSC instead of these other two because I can't invest $10,000 in 6 months of flying to Anaheim or wherever to learn your system. But once again, like you said, when I was doing high-end resi back in the East Coast and I was building my own media PCs, you know, that was a great market for about a year until Bitabox, who now doesn't exist either, once again, there was that market. They just made these expensive media PCs and people were buying them and you could sell them to clients until, you know, the cable companies caught on and said, hey, we're going to put DVRs in our cable boxes. Well, Bitabox went away. My business shrunk tremendously and now everyone just gets it as a service. We're seeing AV transfer from selling hardware, installing and programming it to a subscription software service-based industry where people are saying, I'm going to sell you design and programming and project management, and I'm pretty sure to give you the gear at the bare minimum and really hope you'll keep coming back to me for upgrades and programming and changing the actual interaction. And because of that, we're going to have to adjust. You know, I switched off 7 years ago to Vista and got rid of Vista to 10 and never used 8. It's going to keep happening. Microsoft has a business model. We all have to adjust to it. I don't know why anyone's still using 7. I know people who do, but I think we'll see the industry, as with everything else, the market adjusts. Integrators will adjust. Clients will adjust. We'll all make the transition. It's just a matter of how quickly, and that's always a problem. People in urban areas on the coast, New York, LA, San Francisco, Chicago, tend to move with the industry quicker because they're urban areas where there's more innovation. Yeah. People in Montana and maybe Mississippi won't move as quickly, where things stay move a little slower. Company's going to roll out a $10 million technology renovation in 2009. They're not going to look to change that till 2020, 2021, versus company in San Francisco, which changed their huddle rooms every year. Oh, we're looking for the next best thing. They'll roll out a $6 million upgrade every year. You have to kind of think longevity, and that's how we have to change how we design systems. If you're working in a smaller market, you have to design and implement a system that is going to last that client 6, 10, 15 years versus when you're in San Francisco, LA, wherever, you have to think of a system that might only last a year or two. So we all have to be better about how we design and implement our plans and be ready for whatever craziness whoever's platform we're using, whether it be the OS, the programming, the control side, or even the DSP side is going to change. We never know. God forbid Biam's gone tomorrow and everyone's running out looking for a new DSP. Who's everyone going to turn to? No one can predict those.
Yeah, it's absolutely.
More agnostic and definitely more pragmatic in how we approach.
Yeah, I find it interesting, though, that they held on to XP as long as they did, and they're already killing 7. So.
People use 95 well into the 2000s.
Well, yeah, and there were some programs that, you know, again, this is back when I was a tech manager, there were some programs that were still running 95, and the systems never updated. So,
right.
Brad, when you guys are designing systems, is this something that you concern yourself with? It was the actual back end or the actual OS and the security, really, and the ability to update and patch those security holes?
Yeah, and it kind of has changed from what Sean was talking about a decade ago of being these, you know, home theater PCs or the PC that's really trying to run a lot of the AV. Now the PC is more of just an input to an AV system. So it's a little easier than trying to come in and do an overhaul that might break the entire AV platform by making those updates. But it's still definitely a challenge making sure we get that. Thinking about how we're going to be able to give the clients and their IT departments access to those spaces and the tools that they need to be able to make those firmware updates, being able to push that out. So the tools that help centralize those updates and make things work a little more the way that IT professionals are used to working, which would be from a console and not having to go room to room to go and make updates. As we incorporate more of that type of thinking in the AV industry, and we're definitely moving that way, that definitely helps out the people who have that task of keeping these things patched and current and up to date. So this one, I was told from talking with our IT department, how did this impact us with the vulnerability? They said that patch was something that it was a pretty small patch. They were able to get it out. Didn't break a lot of things. We're lucky we're not running a lot of custom applications. Mm-hmm. So that's where you're going to run into those clients who you know, makes it more difficult to be able to get off of an older operating system or patching and updating something that might break some in-house developed software. But I think I don't think that we're dissimilar from a lot of our other clients we're working with. A lot of them have moved away from that sort of thing. They make their own apps and things like that, but the things that are running their root and their spaces tend to be a little more free of that real customization. And so I think that it's kind of like everything. We look for standardization. We want to have a lot of similar rooms. It makes it easier for that user experience, and it makes it easier for those people who are managing it to be able to make those updates in a consistent manner, and they're not having to run around and chase just some anomalies of quirks by the way that one room that's not like all the rest is working. So I think continue looking towards standardization around how we're putting our designs together and creating the most simple experience, whether that's for that end user or for the IT professional who's having to manage those rooms.
All right. Speaking of quirks, Michael.
quark, whatever.
So I'm teasing because Michael and I had a conversation about this very story beforehand. Okay, so and I know his.
Can I go? Are you going to cut me loose? Can I?
Go right ahead. I know I'm not even going to ask the question.
All right. So I'm going to point out something that may be obvious to some, but maybe not others. And Sean, you really alluded to this in your statement. The browsers that we're talking about here, the major differentiator is that Firefox is open source. Now, what does that mean? There's a big misnomer that open source means less secure, but in actuality, it is the inverse. Open source technology tends to be more secure because there's more eyes looking at it. There are more people involved in the projects. There's more visibility into what's going on, right? So when we're talking about security flaws with these web browsers, that's the big differentiator. Now let's apply that to the AV industry. How many times have you seen a public SSL certificate on an AV device that you're webbing into? Rarely, if ever. They're typically self-authenticated. How many times are you seeing open source software or code running on AV devices? Rarely, if ever. So we're leaving this 110% up to the manufacturers to vet their products, vet their services, vet their security, and it's completely up to them to do that. I advocate that as an industry, we start to take a more open source approach to how we're going to the market and the products that we're bringing to the market. And this does a couple of things. One, it helps bring us in line with where IT is going by large. We're talking about Cisco here a few minutes ago. There are other manufacturers too. I could mention that Fortinet is one that recently had their closed source project that has a lot of security vulnerabilities. They're doing things like hard coding SSL keys into their products that the user can't change. Yeah, I know. Heaven forbid, right? We're not talking about default passwords. You could change a default password. You can't change a hard-coded SSL key. That leaves that product wide open. Open source products tend to not have these vulnerabilities because there are more eyes looking at them. And I want to see manufacturers in the AV industry, and I want to see designers and specifiers start pushing back on the manufacturers. Give us something that we can see. Put more eyes on this. Let us build an industry that we can trust and that we can go to market with confidence, knowing that when I put these devices on my client's network, I don't have to worry about them because there's exponentially more people looking at these products before they go out. So that's just my little rant. And for heaven's sake, stop using Windows on devices. Get away from the embedded stuff. I have rarely, if ever, run into a situation, and I'm ranting here, sorry guys. I have rarely, if ever, run into a situation where a product needs something that Windows offers in order to function, that Linux or BSD or other operating systems that are much more secure and open source can't offer to those services. So that's my little rant for the day.
Amen.
I'm signing on to Michael's petition right now, and I'm going to start challenging our manufacturers to come in here to start opening more of this up to the public scrutiny.
Yeah,
right. It goes to our earlier discussion, though, about interoperability. That same thing. Everyone's trying to carve out their little niche and outdo the other guy. And rather than saying, hey, since if I'm company X and I'm in competition with company W, Y, and Z, I need to find some way to give myself an edge rather than saying, hey, I know I'm not going anywhere and they're not going anywhere. If I can find just a little way to work a little better with them so the designer has an easier job, the installer has an easier job, and the end user has a little more longevity in their product, in their system, we can all make more money rather than always saying, I got to find a way to just grab a little edge. So I'm gonna only use Windows. I'm going to make this Linux-based, but lock it up with this little thing. And we sit here as designers and integrators trying to always explain to the end user and the client, sorry, it's going to cost a little bit more because that guy won't let me talk to that without a bunch of extra work.
Proprietary is dead.
Yeah.
Proprietary is dead.
Okay, hang on. Proprietary is not dead.
Yes, it needs to be dead. It needs to die. It needs to die.
That's a different statement. That is a totally
I am forecasting statement. This group right here is going to start the craze. Proprietary dies today.
We can try, but it's going to take a long – it would take the field of manufacturers winnowing. And you do see that. We won't name names, but some people are dying off like dinosaurs. Some are trying to cling on and probably will get a little spurt and then die off. But we're seeing certain control companies go away. Some speaker companies go away. Mm-hmm. Certain DSP companies can't keep up. And you'll see it winnow. The real question will be someone perfectly new or one of these guys come up with something completely original that will allow them to leapfrog and be the real innovator. And it will be with them basically saying, I agree with Michael's point, of basing open source and saying propriety sucks. We're going to open it up to everybody. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have theories about who will be. I don't want to give anyone a shameless plug, but I think there's one or two companies out there that will do it. And it will take out one or two of the big boys with them. When they say, no, we got to hold on to this rope of closed proprietary systems. And when they can't keep up, they'll just go away. And that's, once again, the market sorting itself out. Well, but it will be a dynamic shift, and you will see a lot of people making a lot of money and a lot of people losing a lot of money at the same time. And
Cisco story and not stifling competition, right? Being able to make sure that we have some consumer choice. You've got Firefox out there as that open source option that you can choose as an alternative. And it's important that we make sure that we have the multitude of options for us as specifiers and for those consumers so that you have good things you can look to if you do find somebody who's not working, not doing business the way you want to, not producing the products you want to.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you've got people who use legacy equipment. There's a lot of, you deal with a lot of government or secure stuff, they want the analog. So there will be those legacy devices. And you'll have a company I really like and I don't get to use a lot, ZV, whose whole market is taking legacy and transitioning to it by just putting this big chassis between the two. Hey, I can take all your analog and ship it out digital, but not at all put on your network. It's a one-trick pony, but it works really well. there'll always be those people who will bridge the two worlds, but eventually some of those companies are going to have to die off, and end users will change, manufacturer change will change, and I agree that, people like Firefox and more open source systems are going to win the day.
Yeah, I think you're going to see some interesting things coming out of both ISC and Infocom this year that are not entirely open source in Michael's, Linux area, but more open source and more playing well with others, I guess is the best way to put that.
Can we bring back BBSs? Let's just get back to BBSs and dials.
No. Don't.
Would you
no,
like please. To play a game?
All right.
Hey, I play Zork 2 all the time, man. Zork 2 still rocks.
That is going to do it for this month. Thank you all so much.
Tic-tac-toe, please.
Mr. Drainer, how do people get a hold of you?
DrainerTechnologies.com, Twitter at Michael Drainer, and LinkedIn / Michael Drainer.
All right, very good. Mr. Reed, thank you, sir.
Hey, you can find us at AstromanAV.com. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook, AstromanAV. Everywhere you can find me on LinkedIn, Sean Reed, and Astroman has a LinkedIn page. Anytime, anything you need, just shoot us a weird message, which people do all the time. Feel free.
All right, very good. And Brad, thank you, sir. How do people find you or HGA?
Yeah, my social media presence is on LinkedIn, Brad Cult with a K, and you can follow HGA on all the social media at HGA on Twitter and HGA.com on the web.
Very good. For us, for AV Nation, go by the website, avnation.tv. That's avnation.tv. You'll find programs like this and a host of others. We have two weekly programs, so looking at the news of the AV industry, both on the residential side and the commercial side. Also, check out our supporter section. They help us financially, help us bring you ITAV and AV Week and Rising Week, and our coverage of ISD 2020, which will take place actually the Monday after this post. So check all that out at avnation.tv. Thanks so much for listening. Thank you so much for watching. That's all the time we have for ITAV.